Welcome to Business Smarts Radio with Tom and Dr. Dave, the clean approach to building your successful business. Now, let's introduce Tom Borg and Dr. Dave Miles.
Welcome to Business Smarts Radio with Tom and Dr. Dave as we bring you the clean approach to building your successful business. And by clean, we are not talking about spick and span and dust bombs. This podcast is all about the acronym CLEAN. We're all about communication, leadership, engagement.
And no drama.
So we are in part three of a six-part series called The Three I's of EQ. Identify, illustrate, and implement. Sounds funny. First five parts, we're actually going in all the identify. We're going to hit each of these five components of emotional intelligence. And then the last one, we're going to wrap it up with illustrating a few simple things to make it easier for you to wrap your head around and how to put it into practice. And we're going to hit the implement part and really talk about how to put this into use in your own life and in your organization. Mm-hmm. So the very first one we did, we talked about self-awareness. Now, what we're talking basically on emotional intelligence based on a model from Daniel Goleman. And Dr. Goleman is fantastic work, seminal work on emotional intelligence. He really popularized the concept in the 90s. Highly recommend his book called Emotional Intelligence or the book Working with Emotional Intelligence from him. Great one. Now, the difference is his model is basically four different pieces of emotional intelligence. The assessment tool that we use is loosely based on his model that a couple other professors and scholars have worked in, also puts in an area called motivation. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Our first part of this, we talked about self-awareness. And that's where it all starts. You cannot be emotionally intelligent without being aware of your emotions, your emotional reaction to things, and how it affects you. And honestly, that's the biggest part of it. That's where it all starts. You have to be aware of it. If you're not aware of it, you're just going to react automatically and you're not even going to know how you come across. Great book. Second book recommendation is from Dr. Marshall Goldsmith. It's a book called Triggers. Love the book. And what really gets me about that is the example he uses. The whole premise of the book is this. Instead of just an emotion and an automatic reaction, if you can become self-aware when something triggers your emotions, that self-awareness gives you that split second of cognitive ability to where your prefrontal cortex, your cognitive mind, your decision-making capabilities can step in and actually do something about it. So it's not an automatic response. Somebody says something, you automatically get angry. You got that split second. You can actually decide what you're going to do. And that kind of goes into the second part, that high level of self-awareness goes into self-regulation.
Right. And Dave, that's the key for our listeners to understand. So if we fail to regulate our emotions, it becomes very difficult to stay focused and on task. So self-awareness, that's the first step. Self-regulation is the second step. And as just you just said, you've got to be able to respond and not react when it comes to that point. So that's what we're going to talk about here today, because that's going to lead us right into motivation. That's where we want to go with this. But you got to have that self-awareness and self-regulation in place before you can move into motivation.
Yeah, and we talked about specifically of self-regulation. We talked about it actually an example in the last two podcasts, but specifically the last one, mm-hmm. where an effect of a negative emotional event, if you're not aware of it and you don't self-regulate properly, say, for example, somebody cuts you off in traffic on the way there and they're screaming and cussing, you're screaming and cussing, you get to work, mm-hmm. you're wound up. It can take up to 4 hours to get back into a solid, focused, productive state after reacting to a highly negative emotion.
Because they did not regulate that emotion.
Correct. And mm-hmm. think about this. It only takes one time on the way to work and one poor interaction with a coworker. You've got two of these in a day. You're 8 hours a shot. How much mm-hmm. real productive work are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the impact it has on other people that you're interacting with in your organization.
And then if you look at across your team or across your organization, it ripples effect to them. And then it's a little bit less, but still a negative effect on them. Mm-hmm. How does that affect your productivity and your efficiency throughout your whole organization.
Absolutely.
Simply because of a better. So the self-regulation can't be stressed enough, but you're right. Mm-hmm. That self-regulation leads to improved motivation, and the motivation is what we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
And with that, we're not talking about carrot and stick type of motivation. We're not, hey, if I pay my folks $1 an hour more, they're going to work a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain extent, people, you know, obviously you have to be, you know, just go back to, you know, Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I mean, it's, there are certain things that need to be met. You can't go into some nirvana of self-actualization if you can't pay the electric bill, right? If you're worried about whether they're going to shut off the gas, you can't really worry about, hey, you know, I really want to, you know, do something that really just fulfills me spiritually or, you know, emotionally. Not so much. So if you take those carrot and stick type things off the table, we want to talk about a level of what we call emotional motivation and really talk about intrinsic motivation, but we have a working definition of it. And I'd like to kind of go back to the notes and share that with the listeners if we can. So what we're talking about here with motivation, it's a passion for work for reasons that go beyond the external drive for things like knowledge or utility or surroundings or how you interact with others or power or methodologies. And they're based on that internal drive or propensity to pursue goals with energy and persistence. So there's other things that I talked about, knowledge, utility, surroundings, others, power, methodology. Those are six different motivators that Edward Spranger talked about in the 20s. And there's been a lot of research on it. And there's, you know, some different assessment tools that identify these on a continuum as driving forces that really get people going and motivate them, how they deal with tasks, how they deal with others, how they deal with their time and their thirst for knowledge or being a more instinctual type of gut instinct kind of person. Take all of that stuff out of it. This is a deeper level. This is a deeper type of, like you said, almost an emotional motivation. It's just a truly intrinsic one that really just, a good way to put it, it talks about here is like I said, it's a passion to work for reasons. Like I said, it goes beyond money, goes beyond status. And it's just a propensity to pursue goals with a higher level of understanding that the emotional value of one's activity is what's important. So you're doing it for you. You've got this, like I said, this burning internal drive to do a good job, to achieve something, to make something happen.
Dave, you know, a great example we can look at is that movie, Chariots of Fire, a fantastic movie that was out, won so many awards back in the day. In that movie, in one of the scenes, one of the runners, one of the Olympic runners, falls down at the beginning of the race.
Right.
Looks like he's going to be out of the race. No chance in finishing the race, let alone winning the race. No. He gets back up and starts to pursue that person that's at the front of the pack with this drive, persistence. And this is going on way beyond anything else. It's for him personally. He, at the last second, is gets ahead of the guy at the finish line and breaks the string. That's a great example of how someone operates on something that goes beyond the basic motivations. That was an internal drive that this guy had, and he just had to win at all costs just because of his self-esteem and what he thought of himself. That's what was at stake.
Yeah, and then this isn't, I'm trying to win for somebody else, or I'm trying to, you know, prove something to my wife, my girlfriend, my daddy, my boyfriend, my cousin, whatever. This isn't proving something to somebody else. This is internal. This is for you. This is pure, raw, intrinsic motivation.
Exactly.
And that's a great example of that. It's kind of like here. I mean, it talks about it's categorized within self, internal or intrinsic motivation. It talks about it's really the most powerful form of a driver for performance. This is something, if you have that internal drive, these are the things that, you know, why people stay late. This is why people, you know, work hard and do things. Especially for entrepreneurs, they're motivated. They have that drive. You're like, why are you doing this? This makes no sense. I mean, why are you? It's just part of their DNA. It seems like it's part of their drive. But if they're not self-aware and they can't regulate their emotions, the problem is, like you said, it's hard to stay on task and stay focused. And so you might have a high level of intrinsic motivation, but if you can't stay focused or on task, you're not going to stay motivated for a while because you're not going to be achieving and accomplishing and moving the ball down the field.
Yeah, you're not going to do what it takes to get ahead. You're not going to do what it takes to really succeed. And you're just going to succumb to any pressures, outside pressures, or disappointments. So again, regulating yourself to the point where you're motivated to accomplish those things that are very important to you.
Yeah, because one thing that's it's crucial to keep going is it's not as much the achievement as it is the progress. I think people can see progress, forward progress.
Mm-hmm.
I read a statement this over the weekend that mentioned there's no such thing as unrealistic goals. There's just such a thing as an unrealistic timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be one of the, but when you can see that progress, you can keep yourself motivated. But like I said, those are just really good parts of it. I love, just like what you were talking about with the Chariots of Fire example.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great example of kind of this intrinsic motivation is if you could take something that typically would derail somebody, you take a negative emotional experience, just what we were talking about, somebody cuts you off in traffic, a coworker says something snotty, something that just grates down your nerves, something that you perceive as a negative emotional experience. And you take that and you're able to, through a high level of self-awareness and self-regulation, turn to this motivation where you're able to take that negative emotional event and you're able to turn it into something positive and turn it into positive motivation. It's not easy to do. There's been a lot of examples of folks that have come from bad circumstances that have had negative emotional issues that have happened and been able to take that and turn it into something positive and achieve some amazing things. But that's really the essence of what we're talking about with emotional motivation.
Mm-hmm. Very good point.
Not succumb to that negative feedback, that negative emotions, not let those negative emotions, because they're not maybe aware of them and they're not able to regulate them properly, let those negative emotional experiences derail them and their progress moving forward.
That's right.
That's a big one. So what else do you have on the on motivation?
You know, Dave, one way we can look at this, let's say for it's you, the owner of a company, and you have an employee comes to you and says they want to quit. They've had it.
Yeah, right.
Now, that would be an excellent opportunity for a person that has high emotional intelligence to handle that situation in such a way where it creates a win-win. So initially, a person with less emotional intelligence might react in that situation, right? Their ego may get in the way. They may start to defend the company, or they may defend this other person who this person is upset with, and that's why they're planning on leaving the company. But a true person that's emotionally mature can take a step back and start to ask some questions, start to regulate themselves and be aware of any kind of internal emotions inside that may be boiling up and just control those and get at the real source of the problem. What is the concern? To have a dialogue with this individual. And if you keep a rational head, many times you can turn that loss into a win by finding out what is that person's concern. And by digging down, by drilling down, you actually find out that there is a solution, and it doesn't mean the person has to leave the company. So what I'm saying here is that if we take this emotional intelligence and work it to our advantage, and when it comes to helping us run a better company, to be a little more mature when it comes to dealing with our employees or our team members, because it is one big family, away from home. And there's just as much dysfunction in the families at work as we have at home times. So if we can learn to control that emotional power we have inside of us and regulate it in such a way that it keeps our motivation in the right place, I think we're going to come out ahead and actually have a powerful impact on all those people that work for us, because indeed we're setting an example to them on how it is that they need to portray their emotional quotient as well.
Yes. And I'll propose something on the flip side of it. Mm-hmm. Have you ever worked for a boss that seemed to lead through fear? You were talking about it, one that has a high level of emotional intelligence that can turn something bad into good.
Yes.
What about kind of through coercion, through fear, and you're scared of what he's going to say or scared of what he's going to do or she's going to do?
I mean, intimidated.
It's intimidating. I mean, how does, I'll just ask, how does it make you feel? I mean, like you said, intimidated, just on eggshells. It's just not a good experience. And I guess my question on that is, if you're working for someone like that, how does that affect your productivity as a worker? Are you going to be motivated to go and do extra? Are you going to be able to, hard charge? You want to go above and beyond, or you're just happy to, sneak in, sneak out, clock in, clock out,
Exactly. That's exactly what's going to happen. And we've seen that with some of the clients we've worked with over the years. You have a person that's very, very strong, and they intimidate a lot of their employees. And what happens is people just learn to kind of glide around that situation, go back, keep their head down, do what they're supposed to do. But there are oftentimes opportunities where the company could be improved, but because of the fear of being lashed out at for offering a suggestion on how to improve things, that they just end up becoming more of a mediocre participant in your company.
And, you know, sometimes I don't blame them, because if you create that environment for them, mm-hmm. then what do you think they're going to do? If you lash out at mm-hmm. people, you make people intimidated, or you don't give that space when you're in it and you're asking for new ideas, for example, in a meeting, mm-hmm. it doesn't take two or three people to get beat down a couple of times, figuratively speaking, to say, well, he jumped all over Joe's case or jumped all over Sue's case. I'm not doing that.
I just do enough to get by here.
Do enough to get by. And in an HR, instead of having a union contract or instead of having an employment contract, I call, from an HR perspective, I call this the unholy contract. Yeah, my idea of the unholy contract when it comes to employment law is this. I'm going to pay you just enough not to quit, and I'm going to work for you just enough not to get fired. And we're just going to kind of nod head, you know, in the hallway just enough to where, you know, I'm not late until I clock in at 7 after. So it's 9:06 when I hit mm-hmm. and it is 4:57 when I'm out. So that way the Kronos machine doesn't clock me in or out as being late. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you just enough. Like I said, that's what I jokingly call the unholy contract. I work for you just enough to not get fired, and you pay me just enough not to quit. It's like the dog sitting on the nail on the front porch. He's howling, mm-hmm. but it's not howling enough to get up and go.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't hurt that bad.
It hurts, but not enough to get up and do something about it. So mm-hmm. it's that. And when you foster that kind of environment, just from a survival standpoint, you know, people need jobs.
That's right.
Sometimes it's just, you know, I know what I mean. The devil I know versus the devil I don't know.
That's right. And you know, what's going to happen is you're never going to have a premier company, a type of company that stands heads and shoulders above your competitors, because you've got this mindset that is starting at the top and works its way down, where people are just putting in the bare minimum, as you mentioned, Dave. And as a result, you are leading at a bare minimum as well.
Yes. And something that I want to throw out to business owners, because this has happened in different organizations before, some I've been with as well. You may not have fostered that type of environment on the top, but you may have a middle manager who's a director mm-hmm. or who's a VP or who's somebody in that middle That's management right. end of it that, you mm-hmm. know, for a division that may mm-hmm. create that kind of environment. They do very well at managing up. So you think, hey, everything's going fine. Mm. But unless you're able as that CEO to be able to get down and really be able to get the numbers and get the data and get a pulse on things, not necessarily disrespecting the managers and VPs and directors that are, but you've got to be able to get those lines of communication as a CEO, because it's not going to do you any good if you have a leader that's working underneath of you, creating that environment for your employees, and you might not necessarily be aware of it because of the size of the organization.
Right. And that's where a good leader gets out and about, walks around the company, talks to everybody, and just has that dialogue going with everyone in the organization, so that there's this free flow of communication. And if there are some concerns that start to pop up, that can be addressed. But if it never gets to the top, if that top person never really understands that these things are going on, because he's not aware, she's not aware, well, that's going to be a big problem in that organization.
Correct. A couple of them, you got to want to know the information, and you have to have back channels to get the information, whether it's assessment data, 360s, or employee engagements, anonymous ways to get it, talking to people. I can promise you, if you're the CEO and you just happen to wander into a lunchroom and sit down and everybody's looking at you, i.e. even your boss, hey, Joe, how are things going at the company? What are you going to say? Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, and you're 16 levels above you. Oh, mm-hmm. hey, Mr. So-and-so, or hey, Mr. So-and-so, things are going great. Mm. Of course you're going to say that. You know what I mean? That's, you know, so sometimes you have to be deliberate about getting the information you need. But all those things create, it's that motivation that is so easy to destroy. But if you as a high performer, or you as a business owner, or you as a leader or a manager or director or VP, understand your own level of emotional intelligence, your own self-awareness, your own self-regulation, your own motivation. And then we'll get on next week into the social awareness, because motivation is essential for social awareness. If you can't regulate your own emotion, if you're worried about dealing with your own internal stuff, it's really hard to start take that next step into social awareness and social regulation, which are the last few parts. You can't really get a good vibe and read on everybody else on what's going on if you're struggling with your own issues.
That's right. And Dave, if our listeners are wondering, how do you find out what your emotional intelligence is? Well, you take an assessment, something that can measure that. And that's something, of course, we handle. But the key is, if you don't know where you're going, you're probably going to find that any road is going to get you there. So right. The key is to know where you are, where your strengths are when it comes to your emotional quotient, and be able to develop a strategy to improve it. And that's where we can start with a good assessment to get you started on that.
Yeah. And you find out for yourself first, because it starts with the leader. It starts with you as the business owner, as the leader.
Yes.
But then find out for your team too.
Yes.
You know, where's your team at? You know, what are the things, and then that even goes into their communication style, what drives them from a different type of, from Spranger's motivational perspective versus this intrinsic motivation. But, you know, looking at all those pieces and really get a good idea and handle on where your team is at. Say you can't fix it if you don't know it's broke, or you can't make improvements if you don't know where you're at.
That's right. Know?
If you don't measure it, if you don't know where you're at, it's hard to go. So I've got, there's a couple questions you can ask, especially because, we struggle with our own motivation. It's very difficult to expend any energy towards others, especially when it comes to empathy.
Yes.
Now, Daniel Goleman with emotional intelligence, he actually phrased the term that we use in the assessment, social awareness. He calls it the term as being empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where it talks about if you can't expend energy into empathy, or we call it social awareness, if you're struggling with your own motivation. But here's a couple of questions that I wanted to leave you all with.
Yes.
But things aren't going your way. How does it affect you? Just ask yourself. Okay. Also ask yourself, how would you feel if you're working exceptionally hard, working your tail off, but weren't receiving adequate compensation or adequate recognition? Not above and beyond, but even just baseline, what you should. What would you do about it? It's something to think about. Also, can you think of a time when you should have persisted, but you didn't? Or, flip side of the coin, can you think of a time when you persisted and it paid off? Ask yourself, what are your goals in life? You know, what are your passions in life? Do they line up with your career? Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. You know, do your passions go beyond money and recognition? You know, why are you working where you're working? Why are you doing what you're doing? Sometimes it's just for survival. Sometimes it's those line up. And then the last thing is this, how would a greater level of motivation and persistence affect your decision-making ability? And so just being a little self-reflective and looking at those questions beforehand can go a long way to say, how would I react if, and what about when this comes up? It almost kind of like a feedback that goes back into the self-awareness and self-regulation, just by being a little introspective about these questions here on motivation. Like I said, to reiterate, motivation is essential for empathy and for social awareness, which is what we're going to talk about in the next episode. So what do we want to leave our listeners with when it comes to motivation?
Well, to recognize that it's an important part of the five parts for emotional intelligence. It's something that you, like all of these, all five sections that we're talking about, they can be improved upon. You need to know what they are to begin with. So a good assessment will help you with that. But from there, once you get into the debriefing, you can actually come up with a strategy to guide you in your quest to improve yourself in that area. So what we're saying is, we got more to talk about in future episodes, but the emotional quotient is extremely important, and we need to know what ours is and what we can do to improve it.
Yeah. So if you want to increase your motivation, the motivation of your team, increase your self-awareness, increase your self-regulation as far as your emotions, and that will help you stay focused, stay on task, make forward progress, and really help with that internal intrinsic motivation.
That's it.
All right. So thank you guys for listening to Business Smarts Radio with Tom and Dr. Dave. And we will see you for our next episode of the Three I's of EQ. Take care.